Thank you for joining us for this episode of Journey Now, produced by Journey Church in Brentwood, Tennessee. For more information on Journey Church and our gatherings, visit journeytn.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of Journey Now. It is so good to be with you. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to be a small part of your day. My name is Mike Geary. I'm here with Alyssa McNally and Tim Timmons and Susie Lind. Our dear Kevin is away. And while he is away, the mice will play, ladies.
Yo, 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 yo. So we're in Maui right now, which is the coolest part, doing this.
Yeah, recording live.
Yeah.
With margaritas.
Remote at 9 a.m. working.
Yes. Oops.
And just as a reminder, the goal of this part, with the podcast is usually in two sections. First section is us wrestling through big cultural conversations. As people who we have it prepped for this, I'm the only one that knows the topic going in. Mm. And we are purposely tackling really explosive, controversial topics to model and to practice sitting at the table with each other and talking about really difficult things from different perspectives and accepting and with kindness and acceptance and all of those sorts of things. We think that's just such an important discipline for our world today. And so I assume that the stuff we'll be talking about today, some of you will disagree with entirely. Hallelujah. The goal isn't that you agree. The goal is we learn to hold our differences in really Christ-like and honoring ways. Hmm. And then Susie, the second segment is Susie usually interviewing, because we're in relationship with tons of fascinating people. And that's why I haven't been on yet. And so Susie usually has an interview. And so anyway, today, what's been dominating the last 10 days or so of news has been the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Oof. Wow.
And to say that there are strong feelings on this sucker, I mean, holy moly. And so let's just all agree from the top that we don't know everything about this. And it's far more complicated than any podcast, meme, social media post can make this out to be. But I thought because it's dominating conversation, I thought it'd be interesting just to talk about how should we talk about conflicts like this? What does justice look like? Because I see half of my, Twittersphere standing in solidarity with Israel for some theological reasons, for some practical reasons, just in terms of strategic alliance. A lot of us, I've been to Israel and have friends there. And then the other half is, hey, this is Israel is oppressive and they are oppressing the Palestinian people. Why in the world would you say that this is a both sides sort of issue? We stand with the oppressed. So I just thought we would throw this open and say, okay, so what are places from which we can at least begin to have conversations about how we should regard what's happening in that region of the world? So, Susie, clarifying questions first. Perfect.
Well, first of all,
when you mean Israel, what do you mean? Is that a person, place, or thing?
I just want to say one thing really quick.
Yeah.
Before we dive in, just like a good old fashioned Christian testimony.
Oh yeah.
There she goes. In hearing you talk about the purpose of this podcast, I just want to share and celebrate how it has changed my life personally, because I sat down at a table and had what could have been a pretty volatile conversation with some family members last week, extended family members, about things going on politically and all that. And I found myself, I found my body responding very distressed in the beginning of the conversation. And I took a couple of deep breaths and reminded myself that I'm not here to change anybody's mind and I'm not here to convince anybody of anything. And no one's trying to, I don't need to take the posture of defense as though someone's trying to do that to me. And I was able to hold space and ask questions. And I felt my body actually even relax throughout the rest of the conversation. And the other person, one of the other people in the conversation was getting very heated. And another person in the conversation was walking in and out of the room because they were getting really stressed out about what was being brought up. And it ended up being just a really beautiful time of being with family and having good conversation and trying to understand one another. And it was really beautiful. And I don't think I could have done that had I not sat around this table with That's you awesome. Guys and practiced this weekly. So I feel myself being changed by this practice. And so I just want to share that and thank
Praise
you.
Praise report. Praise yeah. report.
Super great.
So my clarifying question, because sure. this, so Shane Claiborne tweeted something a couple of weeks ago that really caught my attention and just made me go, whoa, you know, and he said, you can be for Israel and pray for the peace of Jerusalem and all that stuff. He didn't say it in these words, but this was how I heard it. But there's a difference between being for the Israeli people and being for the Israeli government. And sometimes when we support what's happening over there, you know, currently or over the years, we're actually engaging in another form of nationalism.
Wow. Wow.
And so that really caught my attention. So I think my clarifying question is as for it, and it's not, I don't know if it's something that anybody could really answer right now, but as we engage in this conversation, and if you're listening and you are a person who identifies as a Christian, like, when you think through this conversation and are you thinking through it? How are you thinking through it? And through what lens are you thinking through it? Are you thinking through it biblically, through prophecy, through current events, through the news, through human rights? I mean, there's a lot of different lenses. And so I would just recommend a pause and ask that question.
I mean, there have been an awful lot of bad governments in Israel's history.
Yeah. I mean, we just have to open the Bible and see that.
Yeah. So is God still for them?
Right.
That'd just be my question in that. I love that idea. I'm thinking through it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the postures that often, I think we've been handed a way of seeing the book of Revelation that can often lead us to uncritically accept Israel and its government as without error or, you know, I mean,
right.
above any sort of critique or criticism.
And so that's me, Mike. I mean, as I just think about my history,
right.
I would never have said that, but you just called me. Yeah. Sorry, continue. It's good.
Well, no, obviously, because as Christian people, we see Israel as more than just an ordinary nation state, right? It's spiritualized. We're grafted in. I mean, it's the theological waters are really, really deep. And it was interesting when I was there to be around, somebody who was just a hardcore Zionist. So he is like globally aware and can explain to you every reason for every one of the Israelite government's policies and justify them. And then I was also around somebody who was just as passionate for Israel, but left room for the fact that Israel hasn't always treated the Palestinian people well.
Can you define what a Zionist is for those listeners and me who don't really understand that term and how you're using it?
Yeah, it's a political mm-hmm. impulse. It's not it's tied to religion, but it is bigger than that. It is the full expression of the promised land borders and throughout the scriptures. It's the justification of any use of military power against any threat to Israel's sovereignty and right to exist. It is and again, I'm out of I'm sure they would add clarifiers and qualifiers. Mm-hmm. But it's somebody who is incredibly committed to the sovereignty and in some ways the supremacy of the Israelite state as a political entity. And they see the biblical narrative supporting that. So a Zionist, and what's fascinating is Jesus dealt with these kind of folks too. It's absolutely fascinating because you have in Jesus the Rome being the oppressor and the Israelites scattered on how best to resist their oppression. And Jesus offers this way. Now, according to some, Israel is the oppressor. And it'd be interesting to take Jesus into that picture and talk about what he would say then. Mm-hmm. Because I think his message would be the same to the Zionists back then and to the Zionists today. And namely, that the kingdom of God is a political reality, but it's not a national reality. The Palestinian Christians are more your brothers and sisters than Jewish people who are not Christian would be your brothers and sisters. I mean, that would be a pretty radical redefining.
I mean, I remember like even like the first conversation I ever had with someone about this when I was in college, when there was whatever conflict was happening then. And it's kind of the narrative that's been perpetuated to me in the circles I've been in, is that Israel is God's chosen people and they still are as a state. And so like any time of conflict that they're in, anything like we have to pray that they win basically. Because that's who, you know, I was walking with a friend yesterday who was, we were talking about this and she's like, I'm just so confused because my friends keep telling me that we need to be praying for Israel because they need our prayers. And they're, you know, they're the ones that need our prayers and they're the ones that we need to be supporting. And she was just saying, I just don't understand, because when I watch the news and I read about what's happening there, it seems that everybody there needs our prayers and that there is a difference between the people and the government.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because the narrative that I've always heard as a person, you know, who's been in the church since middle school, high school time, has been that.
Totally.
Yeah. What about you, Alyssa?
Man, I feel woefully ill-equipped to speak on this topic, but I do think, I mean, my main perspective on it is we often, in my opinion, when we talk about the Middle East in any way, as a country, mm-hmm. it seems to be very like dehumanizing in the way that we speak about it. It's like we are mm-hmm. so distant that we forget that there's, you know, real people that are on the receiving end of this terror. Yeah. And I think that's usually my gift to give in these conversations, is just to remember that like there are real people on both sides of this and that are innocent and are not, that are getting killed. Mm-hmm. Over politics, which is sad, but it's part of what's happening. And I think that's what matters the most to me, is that those people are not forgotten and still seen. I was at work the other 2 days ago and I met a gentleman who flew in from Israel 2 days prior, and he showed me on his phone a video of you know, the bombs or the mm-hmm. the things going off as he was taking off.
Yeah.
He was like, I left my child and my wife there. So for me, that was just like, like when you start to remember, like there's real people, babies, children, like this isn't just a distant issue that, I don't know. There's
well, and those people have lived with this.
Yeah.
Their whole lives. They have lived with the violence just being a part of their life. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I had somebody come tell me, you know, their interpretation of a prophecy in the Bible and telling me about how Iran was going to be obliterated according to the Bible. You know, my dad lives there.
Yeah.
you know,
like we talk about it as if it's something just, that's like, oh, it's over there.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
Like, those are my people. I mean, like,
dehumanizing is such a great word. I mean, I just think of the rhetoric that I've grown up with, and you know, we were pro-Israel. Oh my gosh. Pro-Israel family. I was up till three last night. I can't even say Israel, but it is so true. I almost grew up almost dehumanizing anybody who was not with Israel. It was like, oh, those, I mean, think of all the movies in the old schools, you know, the Back to the Future, the Lebanese are coming. Yeah. I mean, it was, they were bad and evil.
The picture people. Of Yasser Arafat in your mind.
Yeah. It is such a human issue. And I love how in this past year, we've been trying to rise above all the politicalness of this kingdom and talk about the bigger kingdom and seeing things, everything, including this issue, through the lens of the kingdom of God. So, so helpful.
The verbiage, like chosen people, feels lost on me. Cause I was like, I feel like we're all a part of that now. And all people on each side of this are God's chosen people. Now, I understand some theologies are going to debate me on that, but to me, it's a mute issue. I don't understand why we're talking about it. People are people, and in the eyes of God, they are all chosen. So,
how do we as a Christian community then open up space for people to have really heated views on this? Because there is I'm seeing loads of heat on the dude. If you don't support Israel, you are anti-God, anti-Bible, anti-Semitic. Other people saying, if you don't support Palestine, you are pro-apartheid and pro-oppressor. And then other people saying, listen, and if you try to just stand in the middle, you know, you're awful too. And so there's this hard work of, cause I don't, I mean, Alyssa, I'm so with you. I don't know. I went to Israel and I'm hearing my guide explain it. I'm like, yeah, that totally makes sense. And then you're meeting people who've been to Palestine and they're explaining it. And you're like, well, that totally makes sense too. And well, no wonder they'd resist this. And no wonder they would. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, but doesn't Israel have, I mean, they're just shooting rockets. And then the other side say, but literally it's like throwing rocks at Israel, right? These are just, I mean, the Iron Dome gets, and so you're just like, I don't know. All I do know for sure, A, you're absolutely right. These are image bearers. This is not an issue. This is people, and we are pro-life to our core. So any armed conflict, we want to de-escalate and deal with, and we want shalom for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. If part of the human community is not flourishing, then we are not flourishing. So we believe loving your neighbor means that. I love the distinction Shane made, Susie, that you referenced between supporting the policies of a government versus supporting the right of that nation to exist, the beauty of its people, and the potential purposes in God's sovereign plan for the nation state. Whether or not they, you know, God has them or not, that's a fascinating conversation about does Israel play a part in the end times or even understanding the end times, right? And then I think the third thing is to recognize our place of privilege to be able to sit and have debates that have nothing to do with us.
Right.
And we can watch videos and render judgments on everybody without any ramification for us at all.
Well, we're not being censored. We don't have to be careful that someone's going to come after us if they hear this.
Totally.
We're not having to worry about some kind of explosion outside our doors. We're not having to worry about where our food might come from. Should there be a sanction placed on us? Should there be something taxed or whatever, something unfair and unjust because we can't get what we need?
Right.
We don't have to worry about our internet service going out because of where we stand. I mean, there's a lot there.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And as somebody who comes from that region of the world, Susie, I mean, just to say your dad is there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is not some abstract biblical prophecy. This is where my family lives.
And I think that when Shane said that, it was like, you know, and I mean, I left there when I was four. And so I've had to, I mean, I've done a lot of work trying to understand my own culture and the things that have been deeply embedded in my DNA, it feels like. And then, you know, just trying to understand it. But when he said that, that really struck a chord with me because I've lived my whole life saying I'm from this country where it's known as, you know, it's part of the axis of evil, one, right. You know, in one category. And like, you know, there's so much there, but there's such a difference between the Iranian government and the Iranian people. I mean, anybody who spent time with the Iranian people knows that they are a lovely, hospitable, welcoming, an open-minded community of people, very different from the government that controls things there in that country. And so to separate the two, that's a really easy thing for me to do in when I think about Iran. Right. But when he said that, I was like, wow, I've never stopped to think about it that way. Yeah. And so now that perspective is really helping me because I have some very dear friends who actually have Jewish roots and they are, I mean, if he was sitting here, he could tell you a whole lot about Israel and the Bible and everything that you may or may not agree with, but it helps me know how to engage him more and to ask better questions so that I can understand that perspective. But yeah, I mean, I have a friend that I met through Journey that Kevin and Jamie met a long time ago when they went to Israel, and she lives in Nazareth and she's an Arab Christian woman who is single and lives in Nazareth. She's a business owner, and she and I have just become friends, and we've been trying to get on the phone together the last couple of weeks, and we had a phone date last week, and she's like, I'm in Jerusalem and it's so chaotic here. I can't, there's no way we can talk today. And like, I can't even talk to her on the phone because her life and where she's centered is so, every day carries unknown entities to it. So it's just, I mean,
the closest that America has ever gotten to that moment was 9/11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had a taste of it.
Right.
And it changed our entire, you know, government. It changed our entire existence and our entire world. And it happened on one day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you know, you could also look at January 6th as that as well. Sure.
I'm sorry. One of our senators said that it was just another tourist group coming through. So I think you're overblowing that. Sarcasm right there.
Yeah. I mean, but what happened on January 6th is something that commonly happens in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Just different looking people.
Yeah, there's a bomb you just dropped, but okay.
Well, it's interesting though. I think it's fascinating that people in Twitter world or whatever are doing the same thing about January 6th as they are about the Middle East issue. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter where you stand on this, someone's going to have an issue with you. Like, we start to lose people's humanity no matter what. And it's just it's like almost, I feel like, a way of distancing themselves or ourselves from the issue at hand and just like holding on to an opinion to like save, I don't know, some kind of ego of sorts.
Alyssa, why do you, so that's such a fascinating point. And so why do you think so much of our online existence is spent moralizing? I mean, the number of takes of, if your pastor doesn't preach X, then, you know, you need to find another, or if you think this thing, then you are on the side of the whatever. I mean, what is behind all of that? Why is it that we literally spend so much time just trying to be right, to be seen as right, to be proven right, or to correct others? What sits behind that, do you think? I mean, one thing you opened up was a way to distance. Okay, fear. What do you mean?
I mean, I think when we start to hear things that make us feel uncomfortable or that are outside of what we think or believe, I think we're scared about what those truths or about what those ideas mm-hmm. could do to our constructs, to our programming. And so when we start to start to understand how people think differently than us, it's threatening, feels scary that somebody could believe those things, because it, you know, it changes it up for us. It might change things that you've always thought to be true. And that's scary when people start presenting those things. I also think that there's some tribalism that's happening in our country around some ideas. And I think social media really allows that to breed really quickly. I think people want to be a part of a tribe. I think they want to be a part of something, and that when you can give them something to rally behind with like-minded people, there's a lot of power in that. Look at Christians. They do it. They do it. There's a level of like, well, this is what we believe. We're going to say it, and we're going to all rally behind it. I mean,
well,
we're
even with our money behind Christian culture, there's different tribes now.
Exactly.
That are clear.
It's divided.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're in the business world and you create a product for Christians, you go, wow, what a moneymaker. Christians really put their money behind Christian stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just true. We say it all the time. It's like, oh, if Christians are your target audience, you'll have no problem getting money for that, because they'll buy the things for their people. People love to have something to rally behind. And social media allows you to find the people who think just like you and stick with them and hate everybody else.
Something that I keep thinking about, and it's kind of what you were talking about, Alyssa, is this idea of kingdoms. So if I were king, this is how it would go. This is how I would see it. And if I were a governor in God's kingdom, this is how I would rule. And there's so much of that. I mean, each of us kind of have that. If I were king, if I were queen, this is how this would go. And it should go. And if it doesn't, then you're idiots. And I'm actually fearful that it's not going to go the way that I think it should go. And I think we all have that, you know, that's a Willardism, the kingdom and the queendoms.
Yeah, for sure.
And on social media, that just seems to be what we're all hoping and trying to fight for, is this thing that if we were kings or queens, this is what would make a utopian society.
Yeah. What do you think, Susie?
Well, I think that we, myself included, struggle to take the time, spend the energy, do the work of being quiet, alone, and allowing the Spirit of God, the Word of God, the presence of God to shape, deeply form our inner selves, our inner man, our hearts, our minds. And so I think because of how fast things move and how much information is out there and how much news there is to keep up with and how many opinions there are to try to understand, we get caught up in this cycle of external chaos, and we then become formed and shaped by those things. And it's not fruitful. I think community is hard because we don't spend enough time in solitude. I think I'm guilty of that too. I will reach for my phone first thing and see what Twitter is saying, what the news is saying, what the COVID numbers are before I actually like just practice some stillness and go to the source of life for me in that. So, you know, I think that is becoming increasingly problematic for all of us. We're distracted by many things.
Yeah, no, it's so true. Well, listen, why don't we drop it here? I think
we figured it out, just so we know that we could send this to
CNN.
CNN.
Well, I think Jared Kushner needs to hear this, because he was doing the Middle East peace plan.
Well,
oh boy.
We're going to drop it here.
There it is.
We'll drop it. It's okay.
Okay. All right. So anyway, friends, obviously we're kidding about having it figured out. We are, like so many of us, trying to navigate what it means to be faithful to Jesus and these cultural waters. And we'd love for this to be a conversation, not just between us, but we'd love to hear what you think. Drop us a rating, a like, a review, a share, any of those sorts of things. It's super helpful. Susie did just pick up her phone. We couldn't have 30 minutes with or 30 seconds without that. So proving her point as our spiritual formation pastor. So ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, she's got, she was reading scripture. She was reading scripture. I see it on, she's got so judgy, the Bible app.
Mike, you're so judgy.
Totally, totally, totally. Alyssa, totally. Alyssa picked hers up first. Just for the record. Yeah. What were you looking
Slack
up?
Slack message.
Oh, Slack. Well, then that's
Lord, just I lift your name on high. Lord, that's just what I've been singing in my head while you guys have been doing this, but keep going. We're doing great.
Nice. I've been slowly reciting the Lord's Prayer, but okay. Anyway, friends, thank you so much for tuning in. Randy and Justin, thank you for producing this sucker. Grant, thank you for show notes and titles. And to you, Journey Community, thank you for putting up with all of this nonsense. We appreciate it, and we'll see you next episode.
Wow, what a big topic. This whole current situation with Israel and Palestine has stirred up a desire in me to become more aware and informed of the history and different perspectives of what's really been a conflict of the ages. One thing I know for sure is that every life has been created by God and is worthy of His love. So this is why we pray for the peace in Israel and also in Palestine. And we ask Yahweh to do only what He can do and for us to walk as He would have us. So now we're going to change gears, friends, and we're going to dive into a great conversation I had with Rob Gonzalez. Rob is our student pastor here at Journey, and today he shares a little bit about his story and what he's currently learning about who God is as his father, and what Rob's learning about his own actual physical body and what he's been learning about God through it. So for parents who might be listening with little ears around, we do talk a little bit about childhood abuse. So keep that in mind as you enjoy this conversation with Rob. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Susie.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited that you're on the podcast today.
I'm excited too.
This has been a long time coming.
Yeah.
For you, dear listeners who may not know, Rob Gonzalez Jr.
Yes, that is correct. I had to think about that for a minute. Like, I never use that.
It comes up in my contacts as Robert Gonzalez Jr. I don't know why.
Funny. It's so funny.
But Rob is our student pastor.
Yes.
He oversees middle school and high school students. It's a big job. It's seen many transitions since he's been on staff at Journey, but from the outside, you're thriving.
I'm thankful it looks that way.
Or man. I should say, like, you are bringing about flourishing. You and Jesus are bringing about flourishing. I can see it in the student ministry because I have kids in it, but it has not been easy, and not just the student ministry part, but you're married. You
I'm
have
married, yes.
two littles. You have just been through the thick of a pandemic, because we need to be careful and not say we're actually through the pandemic, but
yeah.
Lots of things have happened in the last year and a half, and I just thought it would be cool to jump on here today and have you share with us, Rob, what have you been learning?
Great question. One of the things I wanted to mention too, we just got a dog, which...
Oh, so, yeah!
Yes.
That's like having another baby-ish.
I wish we knew that. We knew that, and we thought, yes, I wish we would have put more thought into that, but she's great. It's been a lot of fun. My wife is killing it. But yeah, what am I learning? Oh man, it's funny. I was, where was I? I was out and I've been fully vaccinated. So following CDC, I'm out, no mask.
Yay. Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting to see like a little bit of normalcy or just things that I'm like, oh, this kind of feels familiar.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And it causes me to kind of reflect and go back and go, man, this has been, I mean, we're coming like a year and a half almost. Mm-hmm. Right? I think I saw the other day that like we hit daily count of like under 30,000, first time since June of last year, which is like almost a year. So I just was reflecting that, like, where I'm like right now, and then just all the things that I've learned over the course of really just COVID. And it was really cool. Journey is a phenomenal place that has always allowed, I think, not only the people that come, but the people that work here to do work on their story and life. And it's a really cool culture that allows for that. And I think sometimes people think in ministry, like, you don't, you're kind of above that. Like, you don't, but we're still
being the people refined. In ministry think that they're above that, or
I think some people assume that like we've got it all together, mm-hmm. and
yeah,
you know, have we figured out everything, and we don't.
We don't.
My friend Timmons, who you guys know, one of his phrases that I've picked up on is instead of "I learned that," I'm learning mm-hmm. that.
Yeah,
and that's so applicable to my, I would say, last year and a half. So, to give you guys kind of a brief overview of just who I am and how we got here and, mm-hmm. and what the last year and a half has been. I grew up in California, much like Susie,
mm-hmm.
The promised land. Mm. Just kidding.
We didn't move here because we hate California. Let's be clear. I feel like I have to clarify that to everybody I meet yes. now. I did not move here to escape or get away from California because I love California.
Yes. But I love here too.
We love here too. And we did come here for a little different pace of life for sure.
Yeah.
You know,
it's good. It's good. Yeah. I love it out here.
Space and pace. We came here for space and pace, not because we hate Californians or.
No. Yeah. We are Californians through and through. So,
yeah.
but yeah, I grew up in Santa Barbara, California, which is a pretty affluent place.
That's a really nice part of California.
Yes. We were not rich though, by any means. We were pretty poor. And basically my mom was a single mom, three kids. I'm the middle child. And we grew up without a father in the home. And so my dad was around, but not really around. And probably one of the most defining things that happened to me is we had my stepfather was in our home, and at the age of 12, and we're just gonna kind of, that's cool.
Wait, say that again because you cut out.
I said we're just gonna dive right in here if that's cool.
Yeah.
At the age of 12, I was actually subject to abuse by my stepfather. Mm. It was such a weird experience for me because. My sister also was a victim of abuse. My mom has been a victim of abuse. My grandmother, like it's been through our family and just in different ways.
Did your stepfather abuse you and your sister and mom or?
No, just me, mm-hmm. That I know of.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened to me when I was 12 is, I kind of felt like, you know, like most kids, that I have a choice either to, you know, share this with somebody or kind of act like it didn't happen. And I chose to act like it didn't happen mm-hmm. for the sake of just a family. I thought, man, if I like say something to somebody, like all of this goes away, right? I've never had a dad in the home, like all of it goes away. And so my mind, it got really twisted. And so I grew up in church and pursued Christ, and I fell in love with Jesus pretty early on in high school. Mm. I played football and did all the things and felt like I was pretty normal. I took that moment and basically was like, that was a moment. I'm going to like put that on the back shelf and just continue with life as if nothing ever happened. And I did for a long time. And it wasn't until... It wasn't until I came to Journey, and I mean, I'm 34 now. I was 12, so it's been over 20 years
mm-hmm.
That I really that God started to kind of press on that a little bit. My wife and I started going to counseling because we, as a pastor at Journey, you guys, yeah. that's one of the things you guys offer, and so We started going just to get better at communication, our marriage, and it turned into diving into our individual stories. My wife's story is it's incredible and completely, yeah. I mean, she's been through some stuff.
Yeah.
And she's an incredible person, but we started diving in and, with my counselor, I started unraveling this story that I emotions about it that I never felt.
Wait.
Do I cut out again?
Yeah. You started unraveling a story.
Yeah. So with my counselor, I started unraveling the story that I'd put on the shelf for a long time. And she started asking really good questions. And what I realized was that, man, I never really dealt with that. And so
what was that like for you in that moment? I mean, was it because you tried to put it away for so long, right? Mm-hmm. And so yeah. as it starts to unravel in those therapy sessions, did you want to run? How was it for you to be like, to have it start coming out?
So I actually was given an image of in church during service one day of a little boy under a bed. It's been this constant image for the last probably 2 years now. Mm-hmm. And it's this image of a boy kind of curled up, you know, and yet the father kind of lifting the covers under the bed and saying, "Hey, it's safe for you to come out." And I didn't know what that meant, but it was like, it just threw me. It completely was like, okay, God, I don't know what that was, but I'm like, let's just put that back where it was. Like,
it was
an
image that you just received in your mind.
Just received in through prayer and worship. And mm-hmm. I didn't know what that was, but it really disrupted me for weeks.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know what's happening right now. This is not okay. And I remember we were going to counseling kind of every other week, I think, and we're talking about, you know, story and just childhood. And I started sharing the story. One of the things that was pretty, pretty big is I never shared with either my mom what had happened or my wife. My wife knew, but she didn't know who. Mm-hmm. Because she knew, I mean, she knows my stepdad. And so, so I was pretty disrupted by this image, and it was just this angst, this pain for a long time, for about 3 weeks. And finally, as I was kind of at my end, I kind of had this invitation from God to go, "Hey, man, this is the moment for you to kind of trust me in this. Like, I'm wanting to do something in you." And I mean, the question he's been constantly asking is, "Do you trust me? And do you trust me with this part of your story?" And so I said yes, and I went into counseling the next day, and I shared with my wife for the first time the full story.
Wow.
And so yes, the answer to your question is, for a long time I did run. I didn't want to talk about it. And then I think through God's grace and really just his being, his presence with me, it gave me, I think, enough space and safety to actually engage that. And so I say it, speak it out. and I was like, okay, I'm good. All right, let's move on. and God had completely different plans. And so, so for the next, you know, I would say 6 to 8 months, we're working through that and what happened and what am I feeling, all these things and all these emotions that are, you know, anger and just, you know, man, just a lot was coming up. And, it kind of led up to a moment, pre-pandemic where, actually, Susie, you have a lot to do with this. No, it's good. You randomly mentioned going to this place called Focus.
Yes, the Focus Seminar.
The Focus Seminar, if you don't know what Focus is, I describe it like this. It's kind of like a construction crew taking a jackhammer to the road that you've made your entire life.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty accurate.
In a very like short amount of time.
Yeah, it's an intensive, experiential play kind of therapy development weekend, let's say.
Yes.
You can go to Focus Seminars of Kansas City on the Googles, and you can Google it and hear more, read more.
Use promo code Susie21.
Yeah, no.
No, I'm just kidding. That's what it sounded like.
I know. Yeah, there's no promo code. We don't get anything out of it. It's just it's an experience that we offered the people of Journey several times over the last few years. And
yeah,
it's intense, but it's good.
Yeah, it was really intense. I don't know if I knew how intense it was.
Mm-hmm.
But God was so sorry, that's my dog. But my God met me so much there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was so kind and gentle, and man, it was one of the most intense things and really life-changing things that I've ever done. And again, it was one of those moments where I was like, man, I just had this moment.
Yeah.
All right, I'm good. Let's.
But you brought the darkness in your life forth into the light first with Liv and your therapist, and then I'm guessing through Focus, and then since you've done that, I mean, you've been very freely, like, you talk about it.
Yes.
Not even in an intense way all the time, but like, oh yeah, this happened to me, and so this is why I think this way, and this is what I'm seeing, and
yes,
you know, it's just a.
Yeah, after folks, I actually told my mom.
Okay.
For the first time. It was like a month or two after I told her. And
what was that like?
Dude, I my mom is a I mean, she's a single mom. You know, you mess with a kid, she's like mama bear.
She's not married to him.
No. They divorced shortly after I moved to college. Okay. Yeah, she's mama bear, you know, and so I knew she's gonna respond with anger. I knew that she would respond with a lot, but what I wanted her to respond with is just love for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to apologize for not asking. I always thought if my mom ever asked, like, what's going on with you? Right. I would have said, which is why I think like, I love working with students. 'Cause like, we get to ask them those questions.
Yeah. I mean, even just the question, what is going on with you? Like, what's going on with you? Like, in a curious.
Yeah. To be curious for your kids is so important. I always was like, man, I wish you would just ask. I would tell you, mm-hmm. I can't bring this to you. I don't feel like I can. 'Cause then if you ask, then it's like, you asked me, I didn't bring this to you.
Yeah.
So I told her, I told her my parking lot, my house, my driveway.
Oh man.
I wanted it to be this, you know, really beautiful moment, and God, it just happened that way. And, it was so beautiful though, because she was mad, but then she cried, she apologized for not asking. And then she just hugged me. My mom's not a hugger.
Mm-hmm.
And we just wept.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, she probably wanted to hold that 12-year-old boy.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. She did.
Yeah.
So that happens in December, and along with everything else going on in December of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, like, I kind of describe it like, I feel like these moments are like mountaintops.
Yeah.
And we always hear that, right? Vills and hills and valleys.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I always want to get to the top of the mountaintop and then just like chill.
Yeah.
And look over and see what I've accomplished.
Yeah.
Enjoy the view. I want to pull out my lawn chair and just hang for a minute on the mountaintop. And that is never, it doesn't feel like that's ever what God is asking me to do.
It's more like put on a backpack and hang glide off the mountain now.
So December 2019. It was pretty intense, and then COVID hits. And again, in my head, I'm like, again, I made it to this hill, and so I'm gonna shelf that and move on. I've gone through Focus, I've told my mom, I've gone through counseling, I've done the work, right? Over the last 20 years, I've done the work in this area.
Yeah.
I feel like that is kind of like, that was telling my mom was like the last thing I felt like I really needed to do.
It's reward time now.
mm-hmm. So I was like, let's move on. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, during COVID, I started running both middle school and high school. And I was like, I had so much energy and excitement. And I was like, let's do this and this and this. And it's just new lease on life kind of feeling, you know? And then August of 2020, I was so fatigued. I don't think it was burnout. I mean, it could have been. It could have been that I had COVID. I'm not sure. But it was fatigue enough to where, like, I went to see the doctor. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is someone's wrong. I'm not myself.
You're running. I mean, we were running all summer with all this and all these unknowns. Like, you're trying to lead middle school and high school by yourself for the first time. And then you can't meet with students. You can't be with students. We don't know when we're going to be together again. There were so many variables.
And if for the Enneagram people, I'm an Enneagram 6, wing 7. Mm-hmm. And so structure, plans, those are all important things to me. And beauty of God is he goes, man, let me just take those away and you just trust me.
I think for all people in ministry, the idea of structures and plans in 2020, just God laughed.
Yep. So August, I'm fatigued. It's just a mess. And go to the doctor. And I thought, man, they'll give me some testosterone shots. They'll do something. I mean, surely, like, I'm fine. And mind you, I've never been on medication before in my life. I've never done any of those things. I go and they run a bunch of tests, blood tests and whatnot. And I get a text like maybe a week later, from Walgreens. It says, hey, your prescription is ready.
Oh, thanks.
Which, if you're a friend of an Enneagram 6, blindsiding them is probably not the best course of action. I was completely blind. I called the doctor to go, what is this about?
Yeah.
And, they're like, oh, you have pretty high cholesterol. You're gonna be on this medication. And again, I'm 30 at the time, 33. Mm-hmm. Never been on medication. Obviously was overweight. And man, I was like completely caught off guard. And I lost it, Suze, that night. And I didn't really know why. Mm-hmm. But there was two things. It was one, you have to be on this medication. You have to lose weight. Now, weight is something that, you know, for many people, they have different reasons why they, you know, gain weight or lose weight.
Yeah.
For me, it was a very skinny kid,
Really?
In high school. Yes. I was taking weight gainers in high school.
Wow.
Trying to gain weight and I could never keep it on. What I didn't realize and what I think God was revealing to me, he revealed a little bit in focus, but really like intensely, during COVID was I had used my weight for so long to protect the little boy in me. Mm. I wanted to be big. I wanted people to know that I was big. I wanted to, if you knew me, right. And if you know me, I'm not intimidating. I'm not, super, intense or crazy, but if you didn't know me, I wanted people to think that, they couldn't mess with me. And
which is why I invited you to come be a bouncer at our after prom party. A few weeks.
Yeah. Which anytime you guys need a bouncer, I am there.
That's really interesting. So you felt like if you were larger in stature, then people wouldn't mess with you. It would.
And there's something like it, like having physical space between me and somebody else.
Right? Yeah. Is there like an element of hiding that comes with that too? I wonder.
100%. 100%. When the doctor said, hey, I need you to lose anywhere from 50 to 70 pounds.
Yeah.
The only image I had in my head was 12-year-old Rob.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, that's painful.
It was. And it's been a process, but, and I immediately, like you talk about running. I was like, no, I don't want to do that. I'm not going to do that. I remember having conversations with God going, that is not happening. I was so unprotected as a kid. That was the only, what I realized was that that was one of the primary ways that I protected myself, was to make myself big. And I had, this dissociation too. I think, what I would look like as a, you know, 34-year-old male and 100 pounds lighter. The only image I had in my head was this little boy.
Yeah.
And so for the last, that started in October.
Mm-hmm.
I have been intensely wrestling and, intensely, conversating with God about protection, about his role as my father.
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't realize is there was some baggage I had with God, the Father.
Yeah.
You know, I knew Jesus and I know Jesus and I knew God in different ways, right? As a, you know, protector and, well, maybe not a protector, but as a redeemer and, you know, powerful and,
right.
and loving, but particularly as a father to Rob.
Yeah.
That was not something that I could really understand.
Yeah, that's so interesting because, you know, like as a parent, right? We're told often, we're reminded often that our kids get their view of God from us, which is like no pressure, right? But you think about that in your own story. I mean, like there's so many names for God, right?
Yeah.
There is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, but there's like all the other ones you began to name, like Redeemer, Restorer, Provider,
yeah,
Friend, right? And all these images that we get of God, of him like walking in the cool of the day with Adam and Eve and, you know, hovering over like a cloud or coming by fire, you know, all these different images that we get. And because he's so relational and because he wants to be in relationship with us and he's wired us for that, we can't help but experience him in that way. And so I do find it so interesting as we go in life, how he seems to bring himself forth through our stories, you know, yes. like, okay, like I'm going to show you who I am as your savior, as your friend, as the one who loves you. And then, but the father one for those of us, and I would say many of us who have had unhealthy, earthly human father experiences, that's a big one to really contend
with.
And
yeah, it's one that I've it's been a process.
Yeah.
It's not all been good.
Yeah.
It has not all been great. There's been some really sweet moments with God, and really hard moments.
Yeah.
So let
me ask you this, because this is a question I've been asking myself a lot lately. And I ask other people when you're talking about something that you believe or how you think about life, the question I always ask is that consistent with what you know about God and his character?
Hmm.
So as you wrestle with God the Father, how does that, like you hold that in one hand, you wrestle with God the Father. And then in the other hand, you have, you know, the relationship and what you've enjoyed about, you know, the Son and the Spirit of the Redeemer and the Restorer. Like, how do those coexist with each other in this process that you're in?
Yeah. So I think when I started, what I realized is that I've always, I would say if I had to choose one, I think the most closely connected relational part of the Trinity I connected with was Jesus. He was the friend. He was he would weep with you, right? He would be there and present. And I kind of experienced God like if you had a best friend in grade school or high school or whatever, mm-hmm. right? You know your best friend, right?
Mm-hmm.
And your best friend invites you over his house and you spend the night.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that awkward moment where you meet the parents, maybe for the first time.
Yeah.
And you know his dad, right? You've seen him, you've heard about, you know what he's like, you've heard about what he's like, right? But now there's this really intense personal interaction where you're in their home,
mm-hmm.
And it's almost like for me, Jesus was like the advocate of going like, man, you got to meet my dad.
Yeah.
You got to know him the way I know him. Like, he's incredible. He's an incredible dad. Mm-hmm. And I think for a long time, I was like, yeah, totally. And I think the wrestle, and for me, again, the disassociation for me is, I know those things about God as a father. I know his character. I know how he shows up for people. For whatever reason in my head, I always thought, that's for everyone else except for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get that. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't get to have that with God. Just like I didn't get to have a, you know, a healthy father, you know, in my home.
Yeah.
I just don't
know cognitively that's not true, because you teach it every week. That
so there was this
for everybody.
Yeah. So there's this massive tension between the head and the heart.
Yeah.
You know, and the belief and unbelief that we wrestle with in our faith.
Yeah. Well, super interesting. I've been doing a lot of reading and studying this year on embodied theology and how, like, we embody our theology. And it's we talk a lot about the head and the heart and the connection or disconnection. But, you know, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, like, your strength is your body. And, like, you can feel in your body when you're triggered by something, when you're stressed about something, when you have trauma, it comes out in your body. And I totally 100% believe that God not only wants to heal that, but he's telling us something. He speaks to us and shows himself to us and works his will through us in what we experience in these bodies that we're given, right?
Yeah. One of the things my wife shared with me, she was the place we find ourselves. Actually, you shared that with us, but incredible podcast. One of the things they talk about, on, particularly in the subject of abuse and trauma, is if you don't tell your story, your body will tell it for you.
Yeah.
And yeah. How difficult that is, but how true that is. Mm-hmm. And so the last probably 6 months, I would say, I've been, man, God has been so gracious. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much about his character through this experience. Mm-hmm. And I would say, and I'm learning what it looks like to be a son.
Yeah.
Not only to acknowledge him as a father, but what it looks like for me to be, because I've never been a son. Mm-hmm. You know, I am a father and I get to love my kids, but I'm like, you know, and kids are great because I love these relationships that I get to have with my kids, because I get to learn from them too. And so I see my son and God uses those moments with my kids to speak to me about how he loves me and how much more he loves me.
Yeah.
I would say I'm still, and again, will forever be in process. But one of the things that I'm really walking through right now is what trust actually looks like and what patience looks like. Mm-hmm. Over the course of the next year or so, as I continue to lose weight, like, there's this continual refinement of what I thought protection, healing, and redemption looked like.
Yeah.
And so I find myself in this place of I have this last image, and I'll kind of end with this, but I kind of feel like I'm on a walk with my dad, with my Abba, you know. And it's kind of like if you've ever been on a very narrow trail, you typically have to walk single file.
Yeah.
And I imagine, you know, myself almost like my son's age, who's 7, walking behind the father, and I can't really see much except for his back. Mm-hmm. So I don't really know where we're going.
Yeah.
But I'm learning to trust his movement, his guidance, his voice. And there's times where I get to a trailhead and I'm like, yo, this is too much. I'm gonna head back to the car.
Yeah.
And so I spend some time in the car and God is so patient and gracious, and he just waits for me to come back.
Yeah.
And then we go a little further. So that's kind of been the process I've been in for the last year and a half.
I'd love to ask you permission to ask you a bit of a personal question.
Yeah.
And this is something that I think, you know, women talk about this a lot more than men do.
Yeah.
Especially as we work through, you know, trauma and things that have to do with the body. Right. Yeah. And so like, you know, we talk a lot about like women talk amongst themselves a lot about their relationship with their body and how we view ourselves in our bodies and what we appreciate about our bodies and stuff like that. And so I feel really compelled to ask you, Rob, what do you think, how do you feel about your body? What do you think about your body? What's your relationship with your body now?
That's a great question.
Because men have to struggle with this too.
Yeah.
This is a lot of what you've been talking about is that.
Yeah, I'm trying to articulate, I think, what I feel right now versus what I felt 6 months ago. And then I think I'm in this weird place right now where I'm like, again, because I'm in the process, like I have an idea of what this will look like at the end.
Yeah.
And so there's like, I'm not paying attention super intensely to this moment right now in terms of where my body's at. But I would say previous to, you know, this process, again, I think I use it as a tool for protection for sure. But I don't know if I gave it like, I knew my body was pain when I didn't want to deal with something emotionally, like, mm-hmm. I think we're aware of those things, but I think because we're men, I think there's some shame in talking about like body stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it's almost like even in a society, like things are like to have like, you know, the man bod or whatever.
Yeah.
Or dad bod.
Dad bod. Yeah.
Like that's not a bad thing. Right. Like that's actually right. Like people are like, man, that's, you know, I got a dad bod or I got a beard, you know, gut or whatever, you know, the thing is there's a, I think we justify those things often.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if we pay enough attention to what our body's doing and what our body's not doing until either like we're hurt, we're, you know, can't move or mm-hmm. something like, you know, I have to go to the doctor and actually get this fixed and pay attention to it. But that's been probably one of the more difficult things is going, I think the enemy is like, man, when it comes to like my body in particular of going like, you're such a little girl, like kind of like those mm-hmm. kind of thoughts of like, you're being dramatic.
Right.
Right. And even when I tell this story, sometimes people don't get it.
Yeah.
They don't get like why they look at me and go, why wouldn't you want to lose weight? That seems like a no brainer, Rob. And I think what people don't often understand is that, like you said, our bodies are deeply tied to our emotional,
mm-hmm.
Our emotional state in the moment, our spiritual state, our stories, like all of those things, like, because we're not like, we're all whole people, like mind, mm-hmm. body, soul, like all those things matter.
Mm-hmm.
I just think as men, we don't pay enough attention to it at all.
Yeah. So where do you see it going when you say you have an image of where you see it going?
Yeah. I have this picture of, man, it's hard to describe, but I find myself oftentimes with God in nature,
mm-hmm.
which I love to be in nature. I'm not, you know, I wish I could be in it more. Just like whole, redeemed, like,
yeah,
at least for that part of my story, like,
when you say whole, do you mean connected?
Whole in the sense that I'm not hiding behind mm-hmm. my body. I'm not relying on my own strength for protection.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, and the 12-year-old boy who I would say lived inside of me for so long is no longer taking up refuge because they are safe mm-hmm. with the father, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so fully stepping into, manhood, and it's I think from the 12-year-old boy to myself, so it's a place that I see in my head oftentimes. It's very whole, very life, like full of life.
Yeah,
like I'm excited for like, you know, whatever the next year or so brings. And I'm reminded constantly by, you know, some great mentors in my life that don't miss what God is doing in these moments right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's very quick for us to like just run
leap forward. Yeah.
My wife, shared, again, another place to find ourselves. Great podcast. particularly within our story, how much, and he kind of modeled that after, you know, the disciples and how the story of Jesus was told. I think very often it's easier for us when it comes to stories to go from like, man, things were bad, and then things got really good, mm-hmm. you know? And so this process of like, he used the example, death, burial, and resurrection. Mm-hmm. And he's like, and we got to tell our story in such a way that we articulate every part of those moments.
Right.
Not just, you know, the death, but also the intensity of it and the horror and the grief, you know, that mm-hmm. the disciples had when he was buried.
Yeah.
Not just like the joy, right? But all of it.
All of it.
And so, you know, telling our stories that we tell all of it in, mm-hmm. in such a way that is true and important. And so I'm very much like, okay, let me just get to the redemptive side and just like, let me just skip all this.
Yeah.
You know, I acknowledge it's here, God, I'm good, but let me just jump to there. And God is going, no, man, we are like, I'm redeeming so many things in you. And I'm actually like putting things to death that needed to be put to death for a long time. You know, and we are burying these things and they will not live again, but the new man and the new life will, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's, I'm learning patience for sure.
Yeah.
Which is hard for anyone, but I would say, especially in the season. And trust. Those are the biggest things that I, mm-hmm. you know, and so again, I'm on this path with God and I don't know where I'm going fully.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, if I'm going, you know, today a mile or 2 miles or a quarter of a mile, but I'm learning to trust his voice and to be reliant on him as my father, not simply provider, protector, redeemer, yeah. obviously, but as my Abba, which is hard.
Yeah.
So.
That's great, Rob. Well, I'm so excited that people got a chance to hear.
Thanks for letting me share.
You're so great. I love you as a friend and brother and coworker, all the things. I feel so thankful that I get to work with you. So,
thanks,
and that my kids get to be led by you. It's so, I know that they're in good hands, and I get excited when I see all the kids, that the students that show up on Wednesday nights, and how great it is for them to be loved by you. So, that's awesome.
We have some great students. Mm-hmm. So your kids included.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Suze.
All right. Thank you, dear listeners, for joining us today. If you'd like to connect with Rob, you can reach him at rob@journeytn.com. You can also find him on Instagram. He happens to be a fabulous photographer. He's a man of many side hustles, which we might get into in another podcast, but not today.
Yeah. It's actually Robert at Journey TN, just so things don't go to the junk mail.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Robert at JourneyTN.com. Thanks for clearing that up. All right. Bye, everyone.
If you enjoyed today's episode, we would love it if you would share a screenshot of this episode to your Instagram story and tag us at @journey_TN. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on your favorite podcasting app.